Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 806. This is your host, Danny, and joining me for this episode of GTR, we have Pete. What's going on, Pete?
What's going on?
TwitchCon, man. Right?
Man, so I tell this story, I think, almost every time we have a trip. I don't get hyped, right? It's usually, you know, we find out we're going somewhere, I pack my bags, like, it's not until the day before the event that I start to get hype, right? And the same thing happened with TwitchCon. I thought I would be more hyped going, like, in the weeks leading up, but it's and I don't know if maybe it's just because we've been so busy here on the show doing podcasting or, you know, doing our you know, the live shows and so on and so forth. But, like, it's always been in the back of my mind, TwitchCon is coming, right? And now, you know, on the eve of me taking off for Twitch, it's finally happening. You know, we've always been on this focus of audio only, and the only natural progression for Gamertag Radio in general is video. It's the way of the future. It's what everybody wants. We'll never leave our roots in audio, but, you know, TwitchCon has always been, like, for me at least, the carrot for us as a show, right? Because, you know, that's probably one of the best ways for us to grow in general. You know, we get more listeners, we get more viewers, you know, it just grows the Gamertag Radio family. So now it's finally happening. I packed my bag. I double checked and triple checked that I had the microphone, two microphones this time, so you can't give me any guff. Two cables. I got the recorder, brand new batteries. Dude, the hype is real. I am ready.
That's good. That's good, man. So you're going to be there for how many days now?
I leave tomorrow and I get there early evening, like 6-ish. So I'm going to be checking in to my hotel. I know we've got the Discord, you know, partner party later that evening. But other than that, honestly, the parties are fun, obviously, but the focus is getting there, making sure, you know, we get good content and, you know, hanging out.
Definitely.
Getting to the panels, because there's so many awesome panels to help Twitch streamers and content creators grow in general. You know, they have the meet and greets and things like that, and I'm not really there to go for that part of it. There's a few that I think would be cool if I met with, but I don't want to go in kind of fanboying the whole thing. I want to go more as an educational experience, right? I want to go and find out how we can use TwitchCon to make this show the best we can. And so,
definitely
looking forward to hitting the panels, checking out the booths, seeing, you know, what vendors have to offer to make our show better, whether it be, you know, services, whatever, you know, new microphones, who knows, you know, whatever it is I can find to help make this show better. That's my main goal. And then on top of that, you know, shout out to Christina, you know, your good friend, fella, you know, I'm on a panel, you know.
That's going to be good, man. Going to record the panel. I know P is going to do it also as a backup just in case. But yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm definitely going to watch it, man. Going to watch it live for sure.
Yeah, looking forward to that. It's going to be the Latinx in Gaming You Belong Here panel. It's going to be at 3:00 on Saturday at the Give Please Theater. If you are in San Jose, stop by. Would love to see you guys out there. If you see me in the halls, walking around, you see me somewhere in San Jose and you recognize me, don't feel shy, please. I'll probably more shy than you coming up. Tap me on the shoulder, say what's up. Would love to meet some of our fans, our listeners, and fellow content creators out here in the market.
Definitely, definitely. Or hit up Pete on Twitter. Pete Rock, right?
Yeah, Pete Rock, PETROCC. Hit me up. Let me know. You know, tell me what you're wearing, dude. I'll tell you what I'm wearing. And then you can just meet up.
Definitely, definitely, man. So we have an interview with game journalist Kyle Orland. We talked a lot for a very long time about his career. And he also going to be releasing a book next month. We talked about that. So we're going to play the interview right now. And once we come back, we're going to talk more here on Gamer Tag Radio.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so we have a special guest here at Gamer Tag Radio, and we have gaming journalist Kyle Orland. What's up, Kyle? Been a long time. Been a long time.
Yeah.
What's up?
Been a real long time. We go way back.
Way back. And actually, the first time I heard about you was when you called us out one time, man, that article. Remember that? Was it Games Daily?
I do remember that. I don't even remember what I called you out on at this point.
I remember.
But I remember that's why I got your attention.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I think it was, we had a trip for E3 and we had a sponsor by EA or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You took paid sponsorship.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, you shouldn't do that. And you guys.
So how's everything with you, man?
It's good. I've been keeping busy. I still have a career. All these years later, I'm somehow one of the old timers in this business. I guess we both are. It's weird to be this young and also be like the aged veterans.
How long you been doing it now?
It depends when you start counting. I mean, I did like my Mario fan site 20 years ago.
Oh my God.
21 years ago now. So that was like when I was in high school, but I started doing it full time 2006, so over a decade.
I know we're going to talk a little bit about your book that's coming out pretty soon. But I want to take it back, man, to those days when you started, man, like the whole journalism. Because I know you probably wanted to do write for magazines, right, back then? Because that was like the hotness back in the days, right?
I got in just at the tail end of when magazines were still, like a relevant thing outside of Game Informer. You know, I got some pieces in Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Ooh.
Back before its relaunch. And that was like a big deal, seeing my print like that. You know, it's something you could show to your parents and be like, hey, look, I'm an actual journalist. And you show them like your blog. They're like, oh, okay, that's nice. I don't really understand this. But if you show them like your name in a magazine, they're like, oh, okay, that's a thing I can hold.
You still have that issue?
Oh, yeah, I got all my clips sitting around
that's
over here. And, you know, my grandma has copies of them sitting in her shelf somewhere. Yeah, and then it's weird. When I started, you know, blogs were like this upstart thing where people in the magazines were like, oh, you know, these blogs, they have no professional standards. And, you know, they might be faster, but we take the care and we have the experience and, you know, we nice layouts and to have glossy paper and this and that. And, you know, that none of that mattered to magazines. You know, as soon as smartphones came around, magazines just weren't going to last. It was too slow and everyone had the internet in their pocket. And now it's like the established blogs like Kotaku, which was the upstart. Now it's kind of like the old gray lady doing the serious reporting. And now it's like people on Twitch or, you know, screaming on YouTube or like the upstarts and people saying, oh, you know, you can't get your news that way. They're not serious. They're not professional. But it's the same thing. You see the same things over and over. There's pros and cons to every new medium and people are going to get their information how they want it.
I mean, how challenging is that now for you as a writer that you see everybody getting news on Twitter and, you know, some of them might go to the site, some of them don't.
We're lucky at Ars Technica, particularly in that we actually have a lot of our audience who actually types in www.arstechnica.com and goes to our front page instead of, you know, relying on Facebook or Google News or everything for our traffic. So you really need to have that endemic community right now, and you can't really rely on, you know, just having a viral story you know, go nuts on Twitter. That'll happen occasionally, but it's not something you can build a business on. And that said, you know, people still do appreciate good writing. I there are a lot of situations where you can't watch a video, especially when you're at work, which is where a lot of people, you know, read the internet, not surprisingly. Mm-hmm. You can't really put on a video unless you have headphones and an office and no one walking by. And it's not as efficient a way to get your information sometimes, right? I can read, you know, a 1,000-word article in 2 minutes, whereas usually it would take like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes for that same information to come on video. So yeah, there's been a lot of stuff about pivoting to video and whether there's more ad dollars there. It seems like Facebook was inflating its video view counts. Maybe people don't actually want video as much as all the money men wanted. And, you know, it's a mess.
Do you see yourself doing that more? Like, you know, just instead of writing, but also have like video podcasts maybe, or live streaming. Do you see that? Or you're still probably going to stick with the whole old school way, just
I don't know if you remember, I did a podcast for NPR back in 2005.
Oh, yes, you did.
When podcasts were like the new hotness. You probably started right around then too, right?
Yeah, I was it like February 2005 GTR? But I had Internet Radio Show back in like 01 or something like that.
That was before it was actually called a podcast.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, NPR was experimenting with things, and they were like asking... I was working on their internal website, and they were asking for people to come up with ideas. I was like, I'll talk about video games. I got together with Ralph Cooper and Rob Holt, two other employees, and we just, you know, chatted about video games and interviewed some people, and you know, we got a pretty good following. But it was, you know, way ahead of its time. They shut down that part of the podcast program after like a year. And then, you know, a decade later, podcasts are the new hotness again, and everyone's, you know, selling Casper mattresses or whatever. And yeah, you know, I kind of feel like I was ahead of my time a little on that. So,
yeah, do you miss that? Do you miss those days?
A little bit. It was kind of the Wild West. No one knew what they were doing back then, especially not us. Now it's become much more professional. And, you know, I feel like I would need more experience. I'd need more practice, like talking good on microphones without all the...
I think like right now, the conversation that we're having, this is just a podcast and we're just talking, you know, it's not like, I feel like a lot of people that start, you know, launching like their shows, they want to make it all super professional. And honestly, to me, what's better is just let's have a conversation. Like every time we'll go to like an event or an E3 and we interview like, you know, developer, producer or somebody on our show, I just want to have a conversation. It's, to me, it seems more real than just stick with the script and all that, you know, it's like,
but I bet a lot of people get really nervous. That's like, oh, I'd be careful with my words and I need to think about everything and not say, seem stupid.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, like when I make a mistake, sometimes I leave it just because it's funny or I'll remove it. You know? but yeah, dude, I think you should do that, man. Cause you know, you that have been doing this for a very long time. You probably have a lot of stories and a lot of behind the scenes stuff that probably a lot of your readers don't know. And that's why I think it's good to have that, man, you know, not only in writing, but also audio, man, you know, so.
I appreciate the encouragement. I've done some experimenting with video. We did like reviews and, you know, it's nice to be able to show off things as you're talking about them, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You find when putting together video, like I'm trained to written journalism. You know, I took a print journalism course back in to graduate in 2004, and that's what I learned to do. And it's funny, I went to journalism school. I started the year that newspaper circulation actually peaked. Mm-hmm. So every year since I started in journalism has been newspapers dying. But I went to print anyway, and you know, that's I feel like I don't feel confident in video, I guess, sometimes, because I don't have the skills to edit things really quickly, and I don't have that, you know, bright personality that's ready to scream at the camera that everyone seems to want these days. I feel like I'm more measured, and I guess maybe there's a place for that in video, but I need to find my voice and figure out how to find the time.
It's all practice, man. But let's talk about this project. I know you. I just found this out on Twitter. What's that? Twitter? No, Facebook, actually. You talked about that you've been working on a book, right?
Yeah, it's called The Game Beat. It's observations and lessons from two decades writing about games. And I'm counting my Super Mario Brothers fan site back then. And yeah, as you know, I've been writing about video game journalism itself for a long time. I started back in college a site that I called The Video Game Ombudsman. Because, you know, I had a big chip on my shoulder and I was going to fix everything that was wrong with video game journalism because, you know, I'd been reading since Nintendo Power. I was taking journalism courses and I knew everything that was wrong with everything and I knew how to fix it. And, you know, I was just this outsider who was really desperate to, you know, get noticed and think I knew everything. But I'd like to think I've matured a little since then. And I kept writing, you know, columns. I had one on GameSpot for a while. I have one on called Media Coverage on Game Daily. And Crispy Gamer, which was around for a few years. You know, now I'm doing it on my own newsletter. And I just, you know, I took some of the best ones and put them together in a collection. Kind of as a way to, you know, preserve them for a while. Because a lot of this stuff, it's just not online anymore. Stuff that you put online at a site, you know, even 5-10 years ago, if that site goes away, it's just I hope it's on the Internet Archive or something, because no one can find it anymore.
Yeah, that's the hard part. I mean, that's the bad part about the internet. Like, you know, when my first internet radio show back in the days, I had it on this website called npdrill.com, and it was a free hosting. It was a free hosting site for like musicians and stuff, but I was just taking advantage because like, oh, it's a free hosting. Let me just put my MP3s there. So
is that all gone now?
Oh, yeah. It's been gone. The only positive thing is that I have a lot of those recordings on tape.
That's good.
Yeah. So that's that part I got lucky, you know, but
you gotta have backups upon backups for this stuff if you want to preserve.
But like you know, you wrote a lot of articles back in the days, and for example, Joystick, right? And other websites too. Like once it gets deleted, the only way people could actually find it if they dig is Internet Archive, and that's it, you know. But sometimes you won't get anything too. Like sometimes we'll say, oh, there's nothing available. It's just like, oh damn, I'm stuck.
Yeah, it's funny, the Joystick stuff is still actually up on Engadget. If you go to an old Joystick link, it'll usually redirect correctly. So that's one of the ones that actually persevered somehow. Okay. But yeah, putting together the book, it's weird. You look at columns like 9-10 years ago, and it looks like, you know, a different geological era. It's just unrecognizable from the way things are today. Because like I was talking about earlier, it was that we were in the transition from magazines to blogs then. And, you know, some things are different, but a lot of the conversations that people are having are very similar. You know, questions like, should you, what makes a good review? You know, should there be review scores, or does that distract things? Is Metacritic too important? How do you stay separate from PR when they're giving you like free trips and everything? As you well know, how are you supposed to make money at any of this when you know print advertising is going out the window? All this stuff is surprisingly still relevant today. So you know, I look back at these columns and I added a little author's note saying what's changed in the last few years, but I think there's still lessons there. I hope people who read the book will find it too.
Yeah, you know what? When I know we had this conversation earlier on this episode that I mentioned about EA sponsoring us back in the days. And, and the reason why I brought that up, because, you know, back then, you know, we were just doing everything independently. We'd have no money. So when when we got this opportunity, the first person I hit up was Dan Hsu, and he was one of my inspirations. Like,
He's in the book a lot.
Yeah, he inspired me to do a lot of big changes on our podcast. As you know, he would give us advice, and he was the first person I hit up. I hit him up and like, hey Dan, like we get in this opportunity, I pay for my flight, you know, but my co-hosts, they don't have the money, and they're getting an opportunity to go to E3 for us to cover and everything. He's like, look, man, it's fine if you take it, but as long you're being true to your audience and let them know what's going on. That's fine. But once you start hiding stuff, and that's the thing that nowadays lot of YouTubers, content creators, they just take stuff and they don't say anything. And it's like the audience, they're not stupid. Eventually they're gonna
That was a big scandal with YouTube. That was a big scandal with YouTube just a few years ago where it came out that they paid. I think YouTubers are starting to be a little more careful after that. You see a lot of the FTC is cracking down, and you're seeing more prominent warnings like, you know, this is sponsored by Blank at the beginning of the video, and not just hiding one line and down in the description. You know, and it's maturing. It's just like anything else, like podcasting back in the day when that was starting out. It was Wild West, and there were a lot of people doing whatever, and now people who are stuck around or know what's going on are a little more professional. YouTube's going to be the same way. It's the people who are going to endure are going to learn the ethical rules of the road. And yeah, like you said, like Sue said, disclosure is really the main thing, the minimum thing you can do, even if you have to take the trip to inform your readers, which I get, you know, you don't want to be left out just because you're not, you know, big established site with a travel budget. And, you know, when I was working for the college paper, I took a trip to Nintendo headquarters to check out, I think it was Mario Kart Double Dash back then.
Oh my God. Was that GameCube days?
Yeah. 2003. I was like, damn. They had a college media tour and they flew everyone out to Redmond. You know, I wasn't about to pass that up. I was a hungry college student, and it's, you know, it's been my dream to visit Nintendo and see this game.
Oh, you were a fanboy with it. Let's be real.
I was totally a fanboy back then. I'm still a little bit, but I feel like I've mellowed out. But yeah, you know, so back in the day, I did that. Not say, you know, I'm super pure and I'd never do this, but yeah, you got to be upfront about it. You gotta tell the readers, hey, this is what's going on. And they can decide.
You live and learn, man. I think that's the only way, as a person, that's how you will grow, man. Like, you know, make those mistakes and learn from that, you know. So totally
agree.
That's
what you, and when you're young, you can do that. Now that I'm in my mid-30s, it's like, oh, I'm over the hill. I know all these lessons.
So what other lessons you've learned too from as a writer, as a journalist from back then to now?
Oh, that's a broad question.
It doesn't have to be a lot, but you know, the big ones, the big ones that you talked about in your book.
I guess one of the things that often gets ignored surprisingly a lot is it never hurts to ask for a comment. You know, for some of these stories, people like rush it out and they're like, oh, I'm just going to put it up ASAP and I'm not even gonna reach out because I know they're just going to say, we don't cut down, you know, rumors and speculation. But, you know, sometimes if you reach out to your contact, especially if you've made good relationships with PR or with your sources, you can actually get a good comment that'll make you stand out from the other stories out there. And not just rushing to be first isn't always the best idea. Sometimes it helps to wait for that comment and actually give the story a little more context for your readers. You know, it's a lot of times you'll just get a no comment, but a lot of times you'll get something really great. That's happened countless times in my career. So that's the one thing I would stress.
And do you also love to get comments also from the readers too? Not only industry folks? Because the readers, it could be good and bad. You know,
it can be bad.
You think it's more bad than good?
I mean, it depends. At Ars Technica, I think we're really blessed with a good community and a good moderator to keep things, you know, on message and germane to the topic. And you know, if you're just trolling or making ad hominem attacks, you will get banned very quickly. So we engendered a good community that's been there, some of them people for, you know, 20 years writing about this stuff. So that's the good side. But on a lot of sites, like if you're using like Facebook comments, especially if you're looking at that, you know, it's just like an unmoderated wasteland and people will just throw up anything. And you know, if you let people derail the conversation on the internet, they will, because there's no consequences for it. And there's just so many people. So you really, moderation is kind of the key, I guess,
for that. Do you should take things personal? Cause I did back then when I started, I was like, oh my God.
It's hard. I remember when like there was a NeoGAF post about my Budsman article, and they were like, who is this guy think he is? What is he doing? Oh, he thinks he's so smart. Yeah, yeah.
They're a tough crowd.
My God,
man.
They're so mean. That toughens you up. It's when you're just getting your start and you really want to get noticed, you think, oh, they see through me, this is the end, and no one's gonna respect me. But then, you know, after all these years, I'm like, okay, this random Yahoo is not actually gonna have a material effect on my life. No one is reading this, no one who matters actually pays attention to this kind of stuff. It's, you know, rolls off.
Now, with this book is coming out, what, like in a month or so, right?
Yeah, it's going to be out in mid-November as part of the video game story bundle. That'll be at storybundle.com.
Okay.
And it's a pay what you want thing for a whole bundle of books. I think there's going to be a boss fight book in there, something by Jeremy Parrish. I don't know. I think they're still nailing down the lineup. But yeah, you pay what you want, and if you pay above a minimum, you get some bonus books, and they're all delivered as ebooks or Kindle or whatever. And then I'll probably also be making it available on Amazon if you really want you know, a print version that you can hold in your hands, and something I could, you know, show to my grandma.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking about before.
That's good. Was there any cool moments while wiring this book? Like to me today, I was checking out my hard drive and I have like a lot of old stuff there, right? So I found a lot of old pictures, old audio that had never been released. I was like, oh my God, you know, so I'm keeping those. But for you, was that also, have you had those moments too while working on this book or not? Like finding those old articles.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, I find quotes in the book from people who've like, who used to be in game journalism and now have moved on to, you know, bigger and better things a lot. Like Justin McElroy was a video game ombudsman reader, and he's quoted a few times as, you know, talking about things. Now he's, you know, Mr. Big Podcast.
Yeah,
everything.
I know, right?
Lee Alexander had a few quotes, and before she was, you know, an author, a game maker, and everything. Greg Kasavin, who used to head up GameSpot and now is working with Supermassive Games, I believe, working on Bastion and everything since then. So yeah, you know, a lot the number of people who have, you know, kind of cycled through the industry and moved on to, I don't know if better things, but different things. It's kind of striking. There's not so many lifers in game journalism. You know, people who are going to be doing this, who have been doing this for the last 10 years, who I know will be doing it the next 10. Because, you know, it's the call of, you know, being able to get paid better and actually make stuff instead of commenting on stuff is a big allure for a lot of people, I guess.
Now, to end it, like, for those that are up and coming and they also want to become a journalist, any advice? You know, sometimes it could be tough for them. Again, there's so many other content creators out there, and, you know, they probably get discouraged because they're not probably getting the attention, and they're also probably like great writers and so on. So,
well, there's a whole column in the book, actually, so you should read the book. But no, I'm, I'll say, the one thing I'll say is you really got to find your niche within a niche. You got to be unique. Because like you said, there's so many people out there. Back when I was getting my start in 2003, 2004, not everyone was on the internet yet. And the few people who were, it was a little easier to make yourself stand out. But even then, there was already IGN and GameSpot, you know, doing their thing, taking up all the standard, you know, reviews. You know, if you're just going to say like, oh, I play a lot of games and I have opinions about games, so, and my opinions are pretty good, right? So, no, I mean, everyone's got, if you're just going to be doing reviews, there's so many other people out there. You gotta find something that you're knowledgeable about, or that your personality shines through on, or something you can do that no one else has done. Hope there are other people out there who are interested in that. And, you know, it's probably not going to be an overnight thing. It might take a long time. You know, stick with it, and hopefully you'll find that audience. You'll find that niche.
All right. So one more time, where people could get purchase this book once it comes out next month?
It'll be at storybundle.com. And, pay what you want for a whole bunch of books, including The Game Beat.
All right, cool, man. All right, Kyle. But thanks a lot, man, for the interview. And stay in touch, man. Hopefully I'll see you at another event in the future, right? We should sit down and talk, man. For sure.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. I'll talk to you in another decade or so.
Definitely. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Talk to you then.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737 GTR.
RP, so we have a sponsor for this episode, and the sponsor for this week is Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. And it's super easy to use, clean design. And I know Pete has been using this app now for quite some time too, right, Pete?
Yeah, I've actually been using it for a little over a year now. Had no idea what I was getting into. I've always dabbled in stocks, mm-hmm. in like little penny trades and things like that. Nothing super significant, but it was always something that always piqued my interest and my curiosity. So because of the ease of entry of getting into Robinhood as a way to get into, you know, stocks, it's super simple. Plus, on top of that, every time you recommend a stock to a friend and they sign up with your referral code, they get a free stock, and so do you. So everybody wins, right? And just like the referral for regular users, Gamertag Radio is going to have an opportunity for you to go ahead and sign up as well. So Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at gamertag.robinhood.com. That's gamertag.robinhood.com. And it's so quick and easy to learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and track your favorites with your own personal newsfeed. So like every time I open my app, I actually see all of the ones that I've either purchased or things that I'm looking forward to purchasing, right? And then from there, you can set up your notifications to let you know if, you know, they're performing well, now's the right time to buy.
So there you go, GTR listeners. One more time, we're going to mention the website one more time to sign up. That's gamertag.robinhood.com. That's gamertag.robinhood.com.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here, Gamertag Radio. Shout out to Kyle, man. That was a great interview. Lots of memories, man. P, I also mentioned to him about the article that he posted a long time ago, calling us out back then, the Game Daily EA sponsoring Gamertag Radio. Yeah, we talked about that. We talked about that too, boy, for a little bit. And the whole conversation is that you, especially Peter, you're going to TwistCon. I hope they bring this up to for the content creators. But as a content creator, it's good to just be super real. Disclose everything to your listeners. Don't hide stuff, man. So if you get an opportunity from a company, either if it's a flight, a free game, anything, mention it on your YouTube, Twitch, podcast, even in your writing, just mention that, because you want to build that trust with your community. You can't just be hiding stuff, because eventually the listeners are going to know, wait a minute, why is Pete is being kind of shady right now, you know? So if you just being straight up real with your community, I think you'll be okay. And then it's okay for like the independent websites and bloggers and content creators for us to get, you know, opportunities like this, you know? So that was the conversation that we talked about during the interview for a little bit. So what else, P? There's anything else before we wrap it up, man?
No, man. I'm honestly just so stoked, happy, hyped, ready to go. I can't wait.
And P has a lot of interviews coming up for the podcast, so stay tuned. That's coming out in a future episode of Gamertag Radio. And P, have fun over there, man. I can't wait to hear from you, man, from there, man. And good luck with the panel. Are you haven't done a panel before, right? Have you?
Nope. I've done one panel before. University of Miami a couple of years ago had a gaming conference. And me, you, and my wife talked about GTR, so on and so forth, and how to grow community locally. So I have one under my belt. I'm not completely going in, unprepared. I am going to say, I'm not going to lie, though, I am somewhat nervous to do it. I think I'm more nervous about this than anything else.
Be yourself, man.
But I think that's going to be the key. Being myself, staying true, and being honest. And you can't go wrong there, right? So I think we should be fine. I should be fine. I hope.
and just mention your experience, man, throughout the years that, you know, the opportunities and the stuff that we've been doing.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
How it helped you and so on. So, yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be good, man. So, everybody, if you're there on TwitchCon, make sure to hit up Pete or try to attend the panel. That would be cool, man. Take some pictures. And I'm excited. I'm very, very excited. I'm gonna be watching from home. Wish P and everybody else as part of the panel good luck. I can't wait to watch it live, man. All right, so head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback. Also, you could subscribe And listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Radio Public, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Let us know if you have any questions, comments. Hit us up. We're definitely going to play it on a future episode of Gamer Tag Radio, and I would love to do a fan mail edition again. But it's all up to you guys. Send us questions. Even the new listeners that have never sent us questions, make it happen. We'll put it on the show. All right, until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamer Tag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Thank you for listening to Gamer Tag Radio. If you'd like to donate and help us out for future events and more coverage and also better audio equipment, head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. Thank you.